score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Pro games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
Second moves in, shoots, scores! How about that?
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hitman passing a breakaway, marching right in, Tanev a shot, he scores! Brandon Tanev walks in on a breakaway, what a pass by Bufflin! And with 1:16 remaining in the third period, the Jets have their first lead of the night. It's 4-3, Winnipeg!
An empty net goal a few seconds later, the Winnipeg Jets victorious over the Detroit Red Wings 5-3 last night in their final visit, barring a Stanley Cup contest between the two teams, to Joe Louis Arena. Brandon Tanev, the hero, scoring to tie the game at 12:24 of the third period.
What a call by Paulie Edmonds, by the way.
Well, of course, Paulie Edmonds is going to get into it. And then 6 minutes and 20 seconds later, Brandon Tanev gives the Jets the lead, a 4-3 goal. They end up winning 5-3 after Nikolai Ehlers deposits a puck into an empty net. A great comeback victory for the Winnipeg Jets last night in the Motor City. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. On my left, Ezra Ginsberg. On my far left, Dave Minuk. Gentlemen, lots to talk about, but of course, we start last night in Detroit. And I don't know what it is about this Winnipeg Jets team. I don't know if it's that they're just young and they're precocious, and maybe they have a little bit of arrogance behind them that says, you know, we're not going to fade. We might be down. We might be riddled with injuries, but we're not going to fade because we've now seen it for the last three games. Last night in Detroit, a third period comeback. The night earlier in Washington, a third period comeback. And then Tuesday night, of course, a third period comeback against the Caps. This Jets team won't quit. So far, at least this year, we've seen a number of comebacks, and it pays off last night in that 5-3 victory in Detroit.
Yeah, Drew, you might as well start printing the Never Say Die t-shirts, because the Winnipeg Jets have now come back five times when they're down in the third period. And before Brandon Tanev's second goal, the Jets didn't hold the lead in that game. So absolutely, Drew, these last two road games have been very impressive. We talked about it on the Wednesday NHL This Week show. We said that ideally the Jets were going to win two of these three games coming up between the Washington Capitals, Detroit Red Wings, and New York Rangers. The three road games in four nights, we thought that they really needed to win at least two of them to make up for the two previous losses, guys at home. So very impressive. They battled back, as you mentioned, Drew, on Thursday night against the Washington Capitals, a game that I thought that they were completely out of. Yeah. They come back in the third period. They at least pick up a point. They don't get the full 2 points because, of course, Alexander Ovechkin scores with the Jets down one man. But certainly last night, I mean, Brandon Tanev, guys, we talked about him a lot in the preseason, and he's a guy that played a little bit for the Jets last year. I think it was two games or three games for the Jets. Certainly showed a lot of promise and speed in the preseason. Wasn't able to get a goal before last night's game, but yesterday he scores a huge goal that originally looked like it wasn't in, but then the NHL blew the horn and the goal ended up counting. And then the breakaway, which, you know, you got to give Dustin Bufflin a lot of credit there for that pass. That pass, how many guys, there aren't a lot of guys in the NHL, a lot of defensemen that can make that breakaway pass, that stretch pass. So I thought that Buff struggled a little bit earlier in the game defensively. So good on him for making a beautiful pass to Tanev.
It was only minutes earlier that he had almost had that terrible giveaway right in front of the Jet zone that Kyle Connor was able to break up, because it looked like it was going to be a golden scoring chance for the Red Wings to try and regain the lead. So Buff giveth in that case, and then Buff taketh away with that pass to Brandon Tanev.
And Dave, you talk about resiliency, but again, I think it's overcoming adversity as well. The Jets had seven regulars out of the lineup. You already had Tyler Myers out of the lineup. You already had Brian Little, Sean Mathias out of the lineup, and then you throw in Joel Armia, who's been playing well. You throw out Pardon me, you take out Matthew Perreault out of the lineup. I thought Nick Petan looked good coming into his first NHL game of the season. And I thought Chris Thorburn looked good coming back from the birth of his daughter. So you got to give the Jets a lot of credit for playing with a lot of injuries here. And a lot of teams face that. But a lot of people didn't think that the Jets could win this game with all of these regulars out of the lineup.
It's similar to when the Jets went on their run a couple of years back when they had all those injuries and everybody said, okay, they're done. And then out of nowhere, they went on that crazy run and made the playoffs, right?
When all their defense was injured in November, same thing where they were down to, I think you and me were playing defense for them at that point.
Exactly. So you had a ton of, you know, young players in the lineup and they look good. And look, you have, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers, who I think has been probably one of the best Jets all season long. He's been phenomenal. Had a goal and three assists yesterday.
Yeah.
You've got Patrick Laine with a goal and an assist. You've got, you know, Brandon Tanev with two goals. And then I think, Scheifele had a goal and two assists. So, I mean, you got a ton of points. And that line, you know, the Scheifele, Ehlers, and Laine. Scheifele, Ehlers, and Laine looked, you know, really good together. A lot, you know, it's funny because it appeared to have a lot of chemistry, you know, from those young guys. And again, like I said, I think Ehlers continues just to impress with what he does on the ice and his using his speed and his smarts. The other play, and Drew, you touched on it, and I think it's a play that really needs to be focused on because it doesn't show up on the score sheet, but I think it probably was the play of the game, was the defensive play by Kyle Connor, because it's 3-3 late in the game, and if he doesn't save Buffs Bacon, I mean, my guess is the Jets probably end up losing that game. I mean, I'm not saying – obviously, you don't know. I mean, they could have tied it up and won it. But it was such a critical play because it was a tap-in goal for Tatar. I mean, he literally just – I mean, Hellebuck was out and because he wasn't expecting that play.
Mm-hmm.
And if Kyle Connor doesn't make that defensive play with his stick, then it's a tap-in goal for Tatar, and it's a 4-3 game for Detroit. And then just a few minutes later, maybe even less than that, Byfuglien makes that – ridiculous pass to Tanev, who scores the go-ahead goal.
Right, and Justin Abdelkader scored the third goal for Detroit, which temporarily put them up, and it was Dustin Byfuglien, as Drew mentioned, made a bit of a misread, didn't go to Justin Abdelkader, who made a beautiful shot. You can't blame Connor Hellebuck for that, but absolutely, Dave, I think... it was a nice shot.
It was a nice shot, but you don't. If you're a goalie, you don't want to be beaten short-side at any point in time.
Well...
It was a nice shot.
I'm not going to blame Hellebuck for that one.
I think that's a save a goalie in that situation has to make. I know it's a great shot. I'm not taking anything.
He made some big saves earlier in the game. I thought Hellebuck was good yesterday.
I thought he was perfectly fine yesterday, but I think as a goalie in that situation with the game at that point, you know, you're into the second half of the third period at that point. It's a tied game.
Yep.
It's 2-2. I think that Hellebuck himself would probably say, yes, that's a hell of a shot by Justin Abdelkader. But as a goalie, I can't be beaten short side in that instance.
Fair enough.
Although I'd be more concerned about Byfuglien, you know, abdicating his position and going over to, because Josh Morrissey clearly had the left side.
Yeah.
So I don't know why Byfuglien was wandering over to, you know, and I think you said Buff giveth and he taketh.
Yeah.
And it's true because, like, on that play, it was like, what is he doing? You know, why is he going over there? And then, you know, 2 seconds later, of course, he hits, you know, Tanev with the pass that, you know.
You know, Dave just mentioned Nikolaj Ehlers, and I agree with you, Dave. I think Nikolaj Ehlers has been one of the Jets' best forwards all year. And, you know, you got to give the Jets a lot of credit. Again, you know, you had Nick Petan centering the second line with Kyle Connor, and then Blake Wheeler dropping down to the second line with Laine going back up to the top line. Laine's kind of yo-yoed around all three lines this year. But you got to give the Jets credit. I also think, guys, watching that game, these last two games, I think the Jets are starting to gain an identity. And I think before the season started, with all of these young players in the lineup, especially the three rookies, Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, and Josh Morrissey, you know, the Jets are definitely not the physical kind of a grinding team that they were a couple of years ago when they went to the playoffs, when you had guys like Andrew Ladd and Zach Bogosian, Evander Kane, Jim Slater, these types of guys. They have guys that can muck it up a little bit. Don't get me wrong. You have guys like Adam Lowry and Chris Thornburg.
They're not going to shy away from physical play.
Drew, the Jets are showing that they can match up against the top skilled teams in the East. They have not looked like they're outmatched against the Capitals or the Red Wings. And you could say that the Red Wings might miss the playoffs this year, but certainly you watched them last night. They've still got a lot of skill. The defense is a whole different story. Mm-hmm. I think the defense leaves a lot to be desired. And Cronwall, that was his first game of the year, so you got to give him a little bit of slack.
And he's 35 years old at this point in time. So Nicholas Cronwall isn't the same Nicholas Cronwall from a decade ago.
Right.
But to your point, you're right. And you can even say it against some of the Western Conference powerhouses. The Jets' offense against the Dallas Stars didn't look out of place by any stretch. They're an offensive team. They're a skilled team. They're going to give it back on the defensive side of it, because you look at their defense and it's not as good as some of the Stanley Cup favorites. But from a fan's perspective and from a player's perspective, anytime you have the confidence in knowing you can score, and you can score quickly, and you can score, not easily, but you can score really any time you want. And you're not working, you don't have to struggle for each and every scoring opportunity. It gives you the confidence to know that you're never out of a game.
Right.
As we've seen the last three games, where you're down in the third period, but you know that you have the rapid-fire offensive capabilities to get back into a game.
The other player who I thought deserves to be commended for his play was Blake Wheeler. I thought he only picks up the one assist on Nikolaj Ehlers' empty net goal, which was, again, kind of a testament to his leadership.
Unselfish.
He had the opportunity to shoot at the empty net, instead passed it off to the young kid. But the fact of the matter is that he was hitting. It was funny. I was tweeting from the Illegal Curve account last night, and I called him a goon, which I thought was a joke. Perhaps I need to put quotations around it.
I understood it to be tongue-in-cheek.
Yes, yeah. And so, of course, someone was like, I can't believe you would say that. They also thought we were the official Twitter of the Jets, so that tells you what they were thinking about us. But but the fact is that, I just thought he had a very inspiring game. I mean, he does – you know, it's funny, he is that lead by example on the ice type of leader. And you saw it yesterday where think about it, Blake Wheeler, and yeah, he's a big guy, but he was hitting. There was one shift, he hit three different, he hit Erickson twice, but he hit three of the Red Wings on one shift. And it was interesting to watch because, again, like I said, if you're a young player in this league and you're watching a skill guy like Blake Wheeler throwing his body around, It's inspiring for these young guys to say, okay, you don't just have to do X, you can do Y. The other thing I would say about Wheeler that I thought was interesting, how many faceoffs did he take last night?
I was just looking at that. He took a lot of faceoffs, and he took seven faceoffs, and he won five out of the seven for 71%.
Yeah, it was funny because every time he'd go to the faceoff dot, I was like, why is Wheeler taking so many faceoffs?
Well, we're going to talk about faceoffs later on this hour because somebody's got to win some faceoffs for the Winnipeg Jets, and the guys who currently take the faceoffs haven't been doing a good enough job
at
that.
But hold on, guys. Blake Wheeler's right winger, and he was playing center. That's all about usage. I thought you could only play whatever side you're used to playing.
I expect that he's going to demand a trade immediately as the show begins. His agent is going to be on the phone demanding
a
trade.
He can't play center.
No, of course not.
Definitely cannot play left wing.
Yeah, no, that would be wild and crazy as either.
Hold on a second. Patrick Laine shoots right.
Oh, my God.
And he can play left wing.
Oh, my God. They're all going to demand a trade immediately.
The one other thing that the Jets still have to work on, though, is they have to figure out the second periods. Like Ted Wyman, who's going to be on later, tweeted out, the Jets have now been outscored 17-4 in second periods. So I don't know what it is about that middle frame, but this team just doesn't seem to like them. And it's funny. Someone in one of the scrums asked Wheeler about, their starts, and he kind of took umbrage with that because he was like, I feel like our starts have been good. And the Jets actually have had good first periods. I don't know what their scoring ratio is, but I'm saying that their
I think
play...
they've given up the first goal more often than not.
Right.
But you're right. Their first period against Washington on Tuesday night was good.
Yeah.
But they happened to give up the first goal.
No, they've given up the first goal, but I'm just saying their level of play has been good. Mm-hmm. It sags a bit in the second, and then clearly they're third period specialists.
Which, I suppose if you're going to be the comeback kids... The third period is, when you want to do the majority of your damage.
Drew, when we come back from break, can we play Paul Maurice's audio from yesterday after the game? Because I think it was interesting what he said.
Yesterday after the game.
Yes.
Rory, can you get that going for us? Rory's given us the thumbs up so we can do that.
It's short. It's only a couple minutes.
Okay. We'll play Paul Maurice coming back. We're going to preview the Jets and the Rangers much more on your Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Twenty minutes after the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, Dave Maloney is going to join us. Dave, of course, the New York Rangers color analyst on MSG Radio. The Jets on Broadway coming tomorrow evening as they head to Madison Square Garden for their only visit to against the Rangers. Rory, you got Paul Maurice from last night? Okay, per Ezzy's request, here's Paul Maurice's post-game comments from last night.
Yeah, there's a big difference between the, you know, those two big comebacks that we had early in the year, even the three-goal last night. That's a different animal. Like, we did, the players did a great job of shutting that game down 8 minutes into the first period, you know, and it's tough to get off the plane and roll fast team. But made some real good adjustments into what they were trying to do with the puck and simplified their game. And then, yeah, and the mental toughness to stay in it, not open your game up with just one goal and keep going and keep going. I thought after 8 minutes in the first period, we played a heck of a game for an NHL team. And then factor in the travel and seven guys out of our lineup and the youth of our group. That's just an enjoyable win from a coach's point of view in terms of, I'm not saying I had anything to do with it, I mean, just in watching the way those guys played with each other, that's as much fun as I've had behind the bench in a long time.
What does it say about the character and depth of your team?
Well, I'll take a look at the last goal, Blake Wheeler. You know, he's been, works so hard every shift, he makes sure he gets that over to Nicky for the goal. There's outstanding leadership. You know, we got some guys that had played some minutes coming in tonight, and it showed, but they found that way. And the other guys that were fresher, I don't know if that's a word, or fresh, fresher's good. Brandon Tanev, right, just pick up the team with his pace and his speed, and he's the difference maker tonight for us. It's a great win, great, great win.
How thrilled are you for him particularly to do what he's been able to do and then get rewarded with his first NHL goal and then obviously the game winner? Yeah,
huge. Those guys are so important to your team because you call them energy guys or you're just a grinder, hard worker. But to get two and to have them be the difference in such an important game, it's a good payoff for him. I hope he takes all the confidence in the world from it that he can make those plays. And that'll be the key for Brandon. You know, I mean, if he can play that game and have a better finish to his game, he's going to be, that was a great signing for us. And he's been played four games at the end of last year. He played the exact same way and he hasn't missed a beat.
Is this your best Joe Louis memory now or the most recent one for you?
Yeah, sure. We won a championship in here one night. I might take this one over it. This was pretty good.
An OHL championship is what Paul Maurice is referring to there. So you wanted to hear his comments. What jumped out at you regarding them?
Well, you know, we listen to every single Paul Maurice post-game scrum, right? Dave puts them up on illegalcurve.com, and oftentimes Dave is in those scrums. But I thought you could hear that how inspired Paul Maurice was by his own team. And when he was talking, it kind of touched on what Dave was talking about in the first segment on how Blake Wheeler's leadership is really kind of rubbing off on the rest of the team, and particularly a guy like Brandon Tanev. This is his first full-time NHL season. I just thought that, you know, he talked about, you know, I just enjoyed watching the guys play tonight. You could tell he was really proud of this group. And to me, Drew, we talked about how tough the schedule in November is last week, mm-hmm. but really you can probably look at this road trip, especially if they're able to get a couple points in New York, even if they're able to get 1 point out of tomorrow's game in New York, you could really look at this, and this could be a rallying point in the season. Because before the Jets went on this road trip, they were 4-6, right? Mm-hmm. And you could argue that maybe in a couple of those wins, they were lucky to get those wins. You could say maybe that they only deserved to win two or three games. But regardless, they were going on this road trip having to make up some ground. And they got a point in Washington. They got 2 points in Detroit yesterday. So I thought it was interesting, you know, Paul Maurice's comments. You could tell that he was really happy with the way his team played, and he was particularly proud of his captain and the young players.
Well, you know what? You can see when a coach develops favorites, right? Especially, like, he loves Adam Lowry. You get that sense whenever he talks about Lowry. And it's similarly with Brandon Tanev. And, you know, someone asked him, you know, in the preseason talking about Tanev and whether he did enough to make, and he's like, I've already got him on the roster. Like, you could see that he likes what Brandon Tanev brings to that fourth line, and he sees him as this prototypical new sort of new age fourth line player.
Yep.
And that's kind of what he wants, someone who can contribute, who can bang and crash, bring energy, but also score the occasional goal. So I really thought that that was interesting how he just kind of really just was gushing about Brandon Tanev.
Both of those guys, Tanev and Lowry, play the kind of game that isn't going to give a coach gray hair. They're not going to make, you know, silly turnovers. They're not going to play an east-west game. They're going to play Tanev is going to play a speed game, north-south, keep it simple. And coaches, you know, coaches like that because it's not often going to cause them any problems. Lowry, same thing. He's going to work the puck low. He's going to use his physicality. He's going to play. They're smart hockey players. Guys that give coaches gray hair are the guys who, you know, go 1-on-4 and then turn the puck over, you know, at the opposing blue line or something.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you exactly, Drew. I mean, these are smart players. Brandon Tanev had a great NCAA career, and Adam Lowry, as we know, is a very hardworking player, a smart player. Sure, he makes mistakes, and he made a mistake at home against Washington when he lost that faceoff. And you guys know how big of a fan I am of Adam Lowry. You know, he's most likely never going to be a guy that scores 35 goals and 70 points, but he's a great third or fourth line player, and he can play center and he can play wing, and Paul Maurice is a huge fan of Adam Lowry, I know that, and I think he's learned from the mistakes he's made earlier in his career. But certainly, guys, against a New York Rangers team tomorrow, this team has scored the most goals in the NHL. They've got 45 goals already in, I believe, 10 games. And it's not just one or two guys that can hurt you. You know, Rick Nash has got 6 goals, but Jimmy Vesey's also got 6 goals. Michael Grabner, former Manitoba Moose, has got 6 goals. So the Jets are going to have to be better defensively because not only can New York put the puck in the net, but, you know, they've got a goaltender that doesn't like to give up too many goals the other way, right? So the Jets still do have to be better defensively. I mean, the Jets aren't playing perfect hockey right now. I mean, they happen to be one game under 500, but if you want to keep this going, you know, you're going to have to limit the mistakes and be sharper in your own zone.
Well, if you are able to succeed in Madison Square Garden tomorrow night, and by succeed I mean win, it changes your road trip from, you know, probably I would say an okay road trip, because if you lose, you get 3 out of 6 points on your road trip, and you're going to say that's okay. But if you can take 5 out of 6 on this road trip, it becomes an excellent road trip, given all the adversity that they're currently facing, all the injuries, you know, the difficult, quote-unquote, travel, blah, 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 blah. All of a sudden, the road trip becomes 5 out of 6 points, and you're feeling really good about yourself coming home to play Dallas on Tuesday night.
Well, look what happened to them last season. That's all I have to say. I mean, it's a very similar type of road-heavy schedule. They went 4-9-1 and pretty much killed their season.
In November of
2015, they killed their season, essentially, right?
Right.
And so if you look at this year, they have 6 at home, 10 on the road in November. And the truth is, like you just said, Drew, if you can come out of this first kind of big trip, obviously the first game of November was against Washington in Winnipeg, but if you can come out of this trip with 5 out of 6 points, you know, that's big. That's a huge testament to what you're going to be able to do. You know, you come home, you play Dallas, and then, like you said, then you have to go back out on the road and play a few more games. So it's going to be a tough schedule. There's no question about it. They're taking the day off today. And the other thing in terms of the scheduling, or in terms of having more versatility in your lineup, you see it last night in terms of the usage. You know, I don't think anybody played, any of the forwards played over 20 minutes, closest to Blake Wheeler, who played 18:45. And other than most of the other players played double digits, except for Kopp and Thorburn, who both played in the 9-minute mark. Although Kopp was almost at 10 minutes. So I'm just saying it's good for...
Which is a big difference from, you know, last year when you would have seen the fourth line guys, you know, if Anthony Peluso was in the lineup, you would have seen him play maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Honestly,
sometimes some games it was between 4 and 6 minutes.
Right.
If you were chasing, right? If you were chasing the game or even protecting a lead, you weren't running out that fourth line. Whereas now, especially on, you know, the second game of a back-to-back, you feel, and at third and fourth night, you're feeling confident enough to say, okay, I can put out that fourth line. They're gonna be able to hold at least, and you know, save the energy of our top guys. If we're trying to get the win.
When the bench was shortened, it wasn't shortened to the same dramatic level that it was last season or in previous seasons.
Right, and the Rangers play the Bruins tonight in Boston. So, I mean, the Jets are going to get a team that has played the previous night. So, I mean, that's a little bit of a nice thing for the Jets for a change, who have played some back-to-back games here. But it's not going to get any easier. The Jets have back-to-back games next weekend against Arizona and Colorado, which Thursday, are obviously Friday. Not as good of teams as Washington and Detroit. But certainly it's a back-to-back situation, and those teams are trying to get back into the playoff race right now. But if the Jets can end up getting a couple points against New York, come back home, play Dallas and get a couple of points. They've played Dallas well already twice this year. You know, the Jets could put together a 3 or 4 game winning streak and really start to, you know, turn the season around. But, you know, you can't play 2 wins, 1 loss hockey or 1 win, you know, 2 losses type of thing. You got to put together a bit of a streak here.
Well, they try to continue their streak tomorrow night in Madison Square Garden against the Rangers. Dave Maloney, Rangers radio analyst, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
We devoured the main course, and now it's time for the sweet playoff dessert.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk in studio with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Dave Maloney. Dave is the New York Rangers color analyst on MSG Radio. Dave, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you all doing?
Doing very well, Dave. How about yourself?
Yeah, no complaints. Sitting in one of the better cities in America, at the Wharf in Boston, and the Rangers are here tonight to play the Bruins, and beautiful fall morning.
Glad to hear that. Of course, the Rangers playing back-to-back tonight in Boston, then tomorrow evening hosting the Jets back on Broadway. Dave obviously brought you on to talk about the Rangers and talk about tomorrow night's contest. This New York Rangers team off to a really, you know, tremendous start to the year. 8-3 in their first 11 games. You know, they lead the NHL in goals for with 45. Not, you know, let's start with the offense. You know, they're putting the puck in the net at a very impressive clip. Not necessarily what they've been known for over the past number of years. Why is the offense clicking so well at the start of the season?
Well, I think General Manager Jeff Gorton and Chris Drury and the management staff made a concerted effort to change kind of the fabric of particularly their forward group with where the game is going. And I think to deny that this game continues to get quicker and more skilled, you're missing the obvious. And the Rangers, with the makeover, that was the reason, I think we're seeing it played out here early in the season. The depth of their offense is probably the most impressive thing. And really, it's interesting how it's played out for years since he's been here. Most of what happened offensively was either was Rick Nash going to be the guy or not the guy. And it's interesting that the deeper they've gotten offensively, he's become Rick Nash as an offensive player. So I think there are a couple of things. But primarily it was a concerted effort to change the fabric of their presence as a team. I think, you know, in 2014 they lost in the finals to L.A. That core of the team is basically still there. But the supporting cast is dramatically different when it comes to skill and speed.
Dave, Jimmy Vesey was the prized free agent acquisition for the New York Rangers coming out of a really good career at Harvard. He's got 6 goals and 9 points in 11 games, but how has he fit into this Rangers lineup? Not just offensively, but how have you viewed his overall game?
His overall game is really quite good. I don't think you cannot deny the fact that 23 is different than 19 also in the league. Now, he's going to run into a bit of a wall. He's been a collegiate player as opposed to a junior player, where the schedule and back-to-back nights and travel and different things may play a role in something that he'll going to have to deal with moving forward. But you know what, fellas, it was interesting. Edmonton was in here the other night, and certainly Connor McDavid is truly weak. The Rangers did not see him last year. He was hurt. And to watch him play, that's the real deal. But the point is, with McDavid in Edmonton, he really has to carry an awful lot of the mail. And Vesey comes in here with a more of a culture that's one of recent time. There's a really good supporting staff. cast with him. He's playing with Stephon and Nash, although they move bodies around a little bit against Edmonton. So he's a little more incubated than perhaps a guy like McDavid. He's a little bit older. So it's a little different. Two young guys in the league who are certainly going to have an impact on their respective teams, but a little different situation in the role they play with their respective franchises. And a lot of talk about VC, and you know, after 11 games of observing him and observing him through camp, there's certainly warrant for the conversation. He's a pretty good player.
Dave, every fan base has expectations of winning the Stanley Cup, and the Rangers obviously haven't won since 94. What is it like in New York right now? Are the fans putting pressure on this team to win now?
No, I don't think so. I think it's funny we should segue from a conversation in VC into that questioning, because one of the things that VC found attractive and was told by the guys, you can kind of get lost in New York. And you know, it's a very passionate fan base, but in the scheme of things, it's not nearly what it would be in any Canadian city for certain. So while there's a decent buzz about how they're playing and what's going on, and, you know, on a consummate basis, you know, the Rangers just go about their business in a city where there's an awful lot else there. So it's exciting nonetheless.
Dave Maloney is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is the New York Rangers color analyst on MSG Radio. Dave, Rick Nash has, you know, for so long been sort of the focal point of the New York Rangers team since coming over from Columbus. Last year, it was a bit of a down year for him. Obviously, 36 points in 60 games. That's not the production that Rick Nash expects from himself. And there was so many sort of trade rumors floating around him this offseason. And, you know, what's his future with the Rangers as his, you know, cap hit is you know, $7.8 million, and he's going to be an unrestricted free agent after next season. Yet this year he's off to a tremendous start. He's got 9 points in 11 games. You know, what's different from the Rick Nash you've seen so far this season versus the Rick Nash you saw last year?
Well, I think last year was... you know, he got hurt early. I don't think he was ever 100% healthy. And as I mentioned before, the stronger the supporting cast gets around him, the less he has to be the catalyst to the story. And although he came to camp and it was interesting, one of his first comments was that he certainly acknowledged the conversation that was swirling out there in the offseason. He also acknowledged the depth of, and he wasn't getting any younger, and the people around him were getting younger. And yet he still has, he still really is a consummate pro. And I'm not sure that other than being a little bit more healthy, now he does acknowledge that he feels a responsibility to be an offensive player. But as I thought in camp, as the supporting cast around him gets better, he gets better. And there's a little less pressure on him to be the guy that, you know, and I guess the judgment oftentimes at the end of the day is the cap hit on any player. I'm not sure that's fair because the market is what the market is. But from Nash's standpoint, I just think, you know, he started the season on a line with Kevin Hayes and JT Miller, which was deemed to be kind of the third line. And then when Buchnevich got hurt, he got bumped up in the top six. And I just think that, A, he's a consummate pro. B, he has a much deeper supporting cast when it comes to his offense. And C, I just think he's healthy.
Dave, the Rangers play in Boston tonight, as you mentioned. Are we expecting Henrik Lundqvist to get the start tonight and then Antti Raanta plays tomorrow against Winnipeg? Or is there a chance that Lundqvist plays the next two games?
Neither. Raanta will start tonight, and Lundqvist will play tomorrow.
The opposite.
Raanta has been, he's had two starts. He basically threw a shutout against Tampa. He gave up one late as the Rangers won 6-1. He beat San Jose at home earlier. He's been good. He's really a perfect fit. And a lot of times when you get good goaltending, you certainly have to have a world-class netminder is your number one, which I don't think there's any debate that the Rangers have that in Lundqvist. But the supporting guy, his attitude and all those different things, I think are very important, and Raanta has that. There's a thought coming in that the Rangers would hope that their play would warrant only having Lundqvist maybe play 55 to 60 games. And so far, that seems to be it. A year ago, the Rangers got out of the gate phenomenally strong, but Lundqvist was all-world, and he had to be all-world. That really hasn't been the case so far. He had, he probably had his strongest game two starts ago. But that being said, a little bit like the Nash story, the real story of this Ranger team has been their depth at the start.
Yeah, Dave, as a follow-up question to that, do you think that, you know, the critics that have said that Henrik Lundqvist's game has really diminished over the years, do you think that that talk has been overblown?
It's hard from a, we see him day to day, and I don't think his play has altered a bit. I mean, he's been the thing. It's been this way for quite some time. This is Henrik's 12th season with the franchise, and basically for 11 years, how he went is when the team went. And as I acknowledged before, no team, you can't have just good goaltending. To be really competitive, you have to have somebody back there that's really good. And so that being said, you can't have a guy back there that has to be really good every night. Because some nights his really good may not be quite as good as the night before. So to me, I'm encouraged by what the Rangers are doing so far because they haven't had to have the story be Lundqvist. They haven't had to have the story be Nash. And those things really has been the determining factor, despite the recent success. I think you just need to be deeper than one or two stories to be really good.
Dave Maloney, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave covers the New York Rangers as the color analyst on MSG Radio Network. Dave, here in Winnipeg, of course, we're always focused on, or we have been focused really all off season and thus far early this season on Jacob Trouba and his contract dispute. And we've heard so much about the New York Rangers potentially being in the market for a right side defenseman. In New York, we've heard that from the national reporters that the Rangers are looking to acquire a defenseman. Do you get the sense from being around the team on a day-to-day basis that really is a significant focus of Jeff Gorton and the management team?
Is it an interest? Of course it's an interest. It'd be an interest for the 29 other teams in the league. You're getting a big, young, what's out there is a big, young, who many people think is going to be a pretty good player in this league on the right side in your back end. I just think from a Ranger stand, the Ranger history is littered with stories of the one missing piece. And it gets leveraged by, say, if it was at one point, it was a Kreider or it was a, Kevin Klein in a package where the price, I don't think there's one player that you can ever leverage your championship to. And the Rangers, time and time again, this franchise has been 90 years in business and it's only won four cups. And I think the consistency has been the fact that they think they're that close and leverage an awful lot on the one missing piece. And I'm just not sure that that's the missing piece here. So I guess to answer your question, certainly there's conversation. I think if there was something there like any other team that wouldn't cost an awful lot, of course you'd entertain that. But I'm just not certain that the Rangers are in that need now and upsetting the apple cart that they have going now. I'm not sure that that's the right way to go.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. Two sort of what I would describe as depth signings this offseason, Michael Grabner and Brandon Peary, combined for 10 goals so far in the Rangers' first 11 games.
Yeah, they've both been good.
Yeah, they've both been very good. How much of a surprise are both of the performances from both of these, depth signings, quote-unquote, and, has one stood out more than the other, or both been real seamless fits in the Rangers' lineup?
Well, I think Grabner was basically invisible in training camp, and actually Nathan Gerby was another guy that they signed in the off season to give them some depth with speed, and guys that could kill a penalty and different things like that. And I think they're, you know, Grabner had signed a 2-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the understanding was they were going to keep Grabner because there was a deeper commitment when it came to the economy of their team. And he scored the season's opening goal against the Islanders and has been really good. So he was almost like one of those, you know, the older pro, and he's not old by any stretch of the imagination, but a guy who's been in the league a while, that training camp is what it is, and let me get the season, I'll get to be a player. So Peary came in right from the get-go on the power play, and, you know, he caught some eyes, and I don't think there was ever any question that, you know, looked like he was going to fit somewhere. So I think Grabner might be giving camp a bit of a surprise as to how good he's been. And at the end of the day, I go back to the Rangers won the Cup in 1994. I remember when the Rangers traded for Adam Graves. And I was at a Ranger function with then GM Neil Smith. And Neil said he thought they were getting a real character guy, a really good guy in the room, a really character guy in the ice, and a guy, if he scored 20, they'd be very happy. Well, you know what? He scored 54. So lots of times the unknown is really the difference. So now you're coming out of the gate, and the Rangers, you know, they make these acquisitions and do this and that, and I don't think anybody believed that they'd have goals out of these two guys 11 games into the season, and here you are at 8-3. So for all the talk we have and all the planning and the analytics and this and that, you know, sometimes stuff just happens, and it's, and if it's good, it's probably really good, and if it's not so good, it's probably not so good. But from a Ranger standpoint, Peary and Grabner have been very pleasant surprises.
Dave Maloney is the New York Rangers color analyst on MSG Radio. Dave, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. We'll let you enjoy Boston and enjoy the games tonight and tomorrow evening.
All right, guys. Thanks. Look forward to getting into Chicago later. Winnipeg later on. Have a good one.
You too, Dave. Take care. It's head to break. When we return, we'll discuss the face-off situation for the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Beagle will take the draw against Lowry. Beagle wins it cleanly back toward the line for Carlson. Pushed it toward the net. Backhand shot by Beagle. They score! And Washington have taken a 3-2 lead.
The Capitals' goal from Tuesday night as they defeated the Winnipeg Jets. And it all started with a face-off defeat deep in the Winnipeg Jets zone. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Winnipeg Jets face-offs, guys. A very serious problem right now for this team without Brian Little in the lineup. Brian Little's their best faceoff guy. Hasn't played since first period of the first game of the year. The Jets currently are 30th in the NHL in faceoff winning percentage, at least entering last night's games, with 44.4% success rate. Last night they weren't much better. I believe they lost 57% of the draws against the Detroit Red Wings. How important, how legitimate of a concern is the Jets' current struggles in the face-off thought, and do you see it improving anytime soon?
Well, you mentioned it, Drew. Brian Little is very good at face-offs. He's usually around 50%. I think he was just over 50%, maybe 51% last year. It's unfortunate as well, guys, because Matthew Perreault has actually been at 51% this year, and he's out of the lineup right now, but he often plays wing, right? So, I mean, it's a problem, Drew, but, I mean, the Jets have never really had a good faceoff guy, with maybe the exception of Jimmy Slater. So, I mean, Mark Scheifele has struggled in the faceoff circle, I mean, and he's addressed it.
Scheifele entering last night's game successful on only 41.7% of the faceoffs he's taken.
Right.
He's taken 252. He's lost 147 of them.
Right. And you know, he knows that he has to be better, and he practices it. I'm not at every practice, but I know that Mark Scheifele works with the coaching staff and some of the other guys on the team and tries to get better. And, you know, you have Adam Lowry, who has had varying degrees of success on faceoffs, but he's certainly not at 50%. He's under 50%. So it's a problem, Drew, and faceoffs are important.
Adam Lowry has won 46.6% of the faceoffs he's taken. He's taken 174. He's lost 93 of them.
And Dave can talk about Andrew Kopp, because Andrew Kopp, I believe, was almost 60% with the Manitoba Moose. So Andrew Kopp has been centering that fourth line, and so that helps. But I know that he hasn't been as good in his first couple of games back with the Jets. But look at Drew. I mean, faceoffs are important, especially when you're trying to gain possession in your own zone, trying to shut down a game at the end. But it's also important when you want to win a faceoff in the offensive zone and you're trying to tie it up. So, I mean, it's a problem. I mean, should the Jets have addressed this in the offseason? You could say that maybe the Jets should have gone after a guy that has that faceoff acumen. But right now, all you can do is improve. And, you know, it is a problem. I'm not going to sit here and say that it isn't a problem. The power play is a problem as well. And the Jets had the second worst power play in the NHL last year, and they're bottom five in the power play again this year. They didn't get a power play last night against Detroit, unfortunately. But certainly the power play has struggled. The only guy that's really excelled on the power play, guys, has been Patrick Laine. And you could say, you know, Buff's been pretty good. You know, he hasn't scored, you know, as many goals as you would like. But certainly the power play and the faceoffs have got to be better. And when you're talking about faceoffs, yes, you're concerned. And you got to believe that Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, Jamie Compan, everybody, they'd like to be winning more faceoffs. And, you know, it's difficult when you have 16 games in November and you can't practice as much as you would like, right? Mm-hmm. So there's nothing really more that you can say than they have to try to be better. And if they can't, they've got to almost play around it.
In that they have to accept that more often than not, they're going to lose the draw. And then they have to sort of adjust, not their game plan, because, you know, you're saying game plan would be probably too wide of a thing to adjust. But they would have to. They have to acknowledge that more often than not, they're going to lose the draw and then mitigate the effect of losing that draw.
Right.
We saw on Tuesday, I mean, that's why I played that Jay Beagle goal again, or Rory played.
And he's a very good face-off guy. We should mention that.
Right. Because, and how much of that do you think is just sort of veteran ingenuity in winning a face-off? It seems like the best face-off guys in the league are always veterans. They're guys who've been around the league for the most part. I mean, think about the big faceoff guys over the last number. You know, Paul Gostad in Nashville, who's retired this year. He was a good faceoff guy.
Jonathan Toews, Mikko Koivu.
I mean, these are all veteran players who sort of know the
Ryan Kessler,
the tricks of the trade in winning faceoffs. And is this something the Jets, just by nature of being a young team and with Brian Little being out of their lineup, are just going to have to sort of live with the growing pains associated with losing these faceoffs?
I think that's exactly it. I think that you're going to have a lot of young players who are learning tricks of the trade as they develop. So, you know, you saw Nick Petan come in yesterday. I think he was over 50% in his first game back in the NHL. And so I think that's essentially, I mean, look, I think this entire season is about growth and about growing pains. And I think, like, you know, we forget that some of these players who are in their second and third years are still young players by, you know, relatively speaking. And so there's a lot to learn. And when you lose a veteran, like, I mean, Brian Little had so many facets to his game. And, you know, we've talked about Brian Little for years, how he's completely underrated. And most people kind of ignore the fact and they say, oh, well, he's not a first line center. He's not even, you know, and that's fine. Like, but I mean, Brian Little as a veteran brings so much experience to this lineup, and the things he does, not just like at faceoffs, but especially in, when you look at the remainder of the guys who are on this list, as a faceoff specialist, especially in the offensive zone or in the defensive zone, that's a guy you need to have. And when you don't have him, well, then you have to do it by committee. And then you, by virtue of necessity, throw in someone like Blake Wheeler. And, you know, Blake Wheeler now, I think, was at, you know, 58.3% for the Jets right now. Now, I don't know how many faceoffs he's taken.
He's taken 12 faceoffs. He's won seven, he's lost five. So it's a very small sample.
Yeah, obviously I was going to say a sample. But, you know, look, he was very good and he was instrumental in the game yesterday. And again, the one thing I just took a quick look at historically, just look at where faceoff teams have won, the Stanley Cups. Mm-hmm. The last few Stanley Cups, Pittsburgh, 15th overall last year. So, I mean, you want to be in the top, you know, you want to be in the top 15 teams, but it's not. You don't have to be a top five. I guess what I'm getting at.
Your point is the best two face-off teams last season in the NHL were the Arizona Coyotes and the Carolina Hurricanes, neither of whom were playoff teams.
Right. So I it's got to be taken with a grain of salt. I think it's important because it gives you possession, and then you control the play. But you look at Pittsburgh last year, 15th. The year before that, the Hawks were fifth. The Kings were third, and then in 2012, 2013, the Hawks were 11th. So I'm just saying, like, you want to be almost, you know, a top 15 team.
That's some nice research from Dave M right there.
Well, Dave M does his work, of course.
I put some work in.
One of us in the studio came back from break after reheating their coffee by bringing in a giant bag of chips.
Club-sized chips.
Club-sized chips.
While wearing a T-shirt that says kale.
That's true. So, and they weren't kale chips, let me tell you. They were Ripple chips.
Shout out to whoever left those chips in our lunchroom, because I love regular Ripple chips. And
you
there was
realize,
just a little bit.
You realize it is 9:50 in the morning.
Well, I've been up for, you know, 2.5 hours now, Drew. I'm hungry. And, you know,
Rory's
enjoying some right now.
Can we just, you know, sort of break down what you've had to eat so far? It's, you know, but you've been up for 2.5 hours. You've had a cup of coffee.
Yep.
You've had
at least 4 Timbits.
Yeah, a number of Timbits. And you've had a bag of chips.
Right.
Have you
just a handful of chips.
Fine. Have you had anything else?
No.
Any whole grains in there anywhere?
No. I'll probably have like a wholesome meal after the show.
You're going to have an Illegal Curve sandwich.
I am.
As delicious as the Illegal Curve sandwich is, nobody has ever considered it a wholesome meal.
I mean, it's got onions. That's healthy.
Not fried onions, they aren't.
That's true.
And you are wearing a T-shirt that says kale.
Like, the irony is not lost on anyone.
And I don't like kale.
Well, of course you don't like kale. I mean, it's supposed to be it's a play on the Yale T-shirts. You know,
was a present from Naomi.
Ooh, present from Nail.
So I got to wear it.
Well, maybe she can make you a salad while she's at it or something. Let's head to break when we come back. What are we doing when we come back? 10 o'clock?
I should actually probably be making her a salad. She makes me salads quite often.
Well, then you should make her a salad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fried onions, you know, aren't part of a generally a healthy
Drew, have
salad.
Drew, have a Ripple chip.
Okay. When we come back, we'll talk about the All-Star Game and the NHL's plans to prevent the John Scott incident from happening again. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
The 2016 Honda NHL All-Star MVP scored 2 goals in the tournament and wins as a write-in candidate, John Scott!
God forbid the NHL ever have anything exciting happen again. Like John Scott last year winning the All-Star Game MVP vote. That must stop immediately. We can't have anything exciting. We can't have any Cinderella stories. We must protect the sanctity of the NHL All-Star Game. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number 2 now on TSN 1290. The segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. In case you missed what I'm talking about, Ken Campbell of the Hockey News says that the NHL is going to change the rules of their All-Star Game to ensure that, quote-unquote, bona fide NHL players are the only ones eligible to compete in the All-Star Game coming up in Los Angeles in February. Let me ask you guys. I believe actually All-Star Game's at the end of January, pardon me. Let me ask you guys. Who is to decide what makes up a bona fide NHL player?
That's a good question, Drew. To me, it's pretty simple, guys. You make the voting rules or the voting process a simple box system, and when you're voting and you're picking your forwards and you're picking your defensemen and you're picking your goalies, you're simply picking from a predetermined list of some of the top players in the NHL. And then you take out this gray area, Drew.
So no write-in candidates allowed?
No write-in candidates. You have a selection of, let's say, 20 to 30 forwards, maybe 10 to 15 defensemen, whatever it is, and, you know, 10 goalies. And you let fans pick from some of the best players in the league. And that list is compiled by, let's say, a combination of the NHL and the NHLPA, general managers, you know, whatever. You know, this kind of gray area of we're going to determine what a bona fide NHL player is. I realize what they're trying to do here, Drew. They don't want to have another John Scott situation.
Why not? What was so wrong about it? First of all, only the NHL is arrogant enough to think that there's a sanctity I love Kelly Rudy, and he's always been good to us on the show, and he's a nice guy. But I think he's completely wrong on this, because he's backing the NHL's play, saying that there's a sanctity to the All-Star game. Nobody in their right mind thinks there's a sanctity to an All-Star game.
So you think Kelly Rudy's out of his right mind?
On this topic, I believe he is, yes. I think that he's completely off base in this. Nobody thinks that the NHL All-Star game is anything other than an excuse for the NHL to, you know, steal money from the poor people of Nashville last year and Los Angeles this year.
I don't want to get into you and Rich used to bring this up every year on the show. The NHL All-Star game is for kids. It's for fans of hockey.
It's not for fans of hockey. It's not entertaining hockey. Well, how can it be for the fans of hockey?
Well, people pay money and go see it, so they like it.
I find that, yes, and I find it, I guess if people want to pay their hard-earned money, that's their business. But the NHL, the fact that they're spending time worrying about this.
The only thing I would say is this. I understand what your point is, Drew, and I think that you don't want this to become a sideshow every year. Like, I agree with you that the John Scott thing wasn't that big a deal. In fact, I think it made an unremarkable game remarkable.
Right.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people focused on what was going to happen at the All-Star game, and it became a story in and of itself, and it was a lot of fun, and people had fun with it. Now, the fact of the matter is, it kind of gets a little boring and a little tired if every year we have a John Scott situation where, oh, who's going to be the next, you know, and the fact of the matter is you get one or two people who kind of champion this idea of let's get this guy going.
In past, it's been Rory Fitzpatrick. There was a Vote for Rory campaign, which was, you know, tongue-in-cheek a number of years ago. There was Zemgus Girgensons because the entire country of Latvia voted for him in. But, you know, who's to say what a bona fide NHL player is? If you're on an NHL roster...
No, but I mean,
aren't you a bona fide NHL player?
Look, the fact is that Ez is 100% right. I mean, if you want to have control over the process, it's not difficult. They used to do it back in the day. If you think about it, when you were a kid, you looked at the box list. In fact, if you remember,
there was no online thing.
No, there's no online thing. We got the little punch cards, and you had to like either
at
punch
McDonald's,
through.
Right?
Yeah,
I think it was at old Jets games.
Yeah, it was at the old Jets
games. You go to the ballot box.
It was like one of those narrow.
So bring
things.
That back. Like and, not that exact system, Dave, but do it online. Where you have a predetermined list of good players that deserve to be at the All-Star game based on the seasons they're having.
Sure.
And then you take this out. And back to what you said before, I mean, the NHL created the John Scott situation by allowing it. So the fact that they then tried to kind of kill it was ridiculous. I mean, we talked about this a lot last year. I mean, it was great for John Scott. It was movies are made about that type of
stuff,
right?
They're making a movie about
they
it.
They are. Okay, so there
this
you go.
This is the NHL that can't get any publicity if their lives depend on it, and can't attract the casual fan no matter what they do, and they get a great story out of it. So, you know, let's kill the story. Let's make sure it never happens again. Let's make sure that this exhibition, because that's what the All-Star game is, it's clearly an exhibition. Let's make sure that nothing fun of that nature would ever happen again.
Well, that at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, Drew. And I you know, back to what you said, of course they're going to make money off of the All-Star game. They're going to make a lot of money off of the All-Star game, but it is supposed to be fun. So have the best players in the world play in the All-Star game and try to make it as fun as possible. The skills competition, the actual game itself. Of course, no one cares about the score of the actual game. It's just supposed to be fun. But kind of take this whole they've kind of killed the fun year after year by not getting it right. They should finally get it right this year.
Yeah, and like I said, going back to the
altogether.
Well, going back to the idea of, look, you want to see the, like in theory, Ezzy's right. This is for young fans who really, you know, enjoy seeing like the high scoring, you know, the stars of today playing in the game. And the fact is, again, I'm going back to this whole. How many John Scott stories do we need? Do we need a John Scott story part deux? Do we need it part trois? Like the fact of the matter is,
somebody's mom is a French teacher.
No big deal. My mom taught French. She said I was the best of her kids in French. But anyways, sorry, Daniel and Rach. But the fact of the matter is that there is no need, I think, to continue to have the same storyline. The fact is, you have to create new storylines. And so, I know what you're saying. The NHL doesn't need to kill fun. Like, the fact is, there's a way of doing this to just put this rule into place without seeming to be heavy-handed about it. And it comes across as slightly heavy-handed when you're saying, we're not going to allow this based on this, as opposed to just instituting a set of rules and just going about your business.
Like Ezzy said, if they had done that, like Ezzy said, where they just removed the write-in capabilities, that would have been fine. I mean, you know, but to all of a sudden come up with some sort of random and interpretive, you know, qualification of a bona fide NHL player I mean, they just make things way more complicated than they ever need it to be. It just doesn't make any sense to me why the NHL can't do anything. You know, all due respect to the three of us, I don't think that we're geniuses by any stretch of the imagination, but why they think it needs to be the most complicated, convoluted system in the imaginable just boggles my mind. Just simply, like as he said, make it up that way.
We have a tweet from, hold on, he's got an unusual name. Hold on, the Wolves HA is his Twitter handle. It's online contest for fans. Two fans win. They draft two teams from a list of players determined by the league live on TV.
Great idea.
So it's an interesting concept. You know, like, you know, the idea is you go up, you win a contest, you get to be the kind of the celebrity coach.
By the way, all-star GM. Game in French, jeu d'étoile.
Wow. As he also knows some Francais.
I don't know that anybody was interested in that piece of information. As
we have listeners in Quebec.
And France.
I know for a fact we do.
Okay, I believe you.
We're big in Montreal. We're big in Trois-Rivières. We have some fans.
And we're losing them rapidly. That would be my guess. Let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the struggles of the Vancouver Canucks. What do they need to do to improve things on the left coast of Canada? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.ca.
I saw a lot of effort, and if you're grasping at straws for some positive, I think that's an important one.
We're talking to Pierre LeBrun from TSN, as always brought to you by Metro Ford. Will.
Pierre LeBrun saying that he sees a lot of positives, or he sees some effort, at least, from the Vancouver Canucks. I think that might be not the best, not what the Canucks fans are hoping for. Things are not going very well on the left coast, as the Canucks are off to a poor start this season, 4-6-1 in their first 11 games. Record's not terrible, but the fact that they've scored 17 goals in 11 games tells me that their winning percentage, however mediocre it might be, is probably not even realistic to be kept up for the entirety of the season. This Vancouver Canucks team, like I said, 17 goals scored in 11 games played to start this 2016-17 NHL season. Ezzy, are the Canucks as poor offensively as they've been performing? Is this a team that's completely in need of a rebuild? And are they fooling themselves to sort of do this rebuild on the fly that they've been trying to do for the last number of years?
Well, first of all, going back to last segment, it's actually the All-Star Game in French is Match des Étoiles, not Jeu des Étoiles. So just wanted to get that out there. You know, I mean, I did take French immersion. So, I want to show my dad that my French immersion education paid off, Drew, first of all. But let's get into the Vancouver Canucks here. I didn't pick the Vancouver Canucks to be a playoff team, guys. I don't think any of us did. But certainly, Drew, I mean, to answer your question, this team is not as bad offensively as they're playing right now. How many times have they been shut out this year? Four times?
I believe so. That sounds
five times? Right. I mean, you wouldn't expect a team that has the Sedins, and they've picked up Louis Erickson, which was their big free agent acquisition. They've got other guys that can put the puck in the net. So right now, certainly, they're struggling. But, you know, you also talk about, you know, should this team rebuild? I mean, they're not completely out of it. They're only a couple of points behind the Calgary Flames and the Winnipeg Jets, who are holding down those last two wild card spots right now. I mean, guys, it's 10 to 12 games into the season here. I mean, let's not get too excited. If they're having trouble scoring goals like this 3 weeks from now, obviously, you know, you got to be a little bit more concerned. But you look at this organization, Drew, and they've kind of, if you think about it, guys, they've kind of rebuilt on the fly, right?
But have they? I mean, rebuilding on the fly indicates...
Well, they've gone young, but they've also got some veterans. Like, so, you know, for example, Corey Schneider, you know, at the 2013 draft in New Jersey, you know, you bring in a Bo Horvat. You've traded Jared McCann to the Florida Panthers to bring in Eric Gabranson and kind of shore up your defense. So you're kind of a mixture of veterans and young players, and the gap there, I think, is too big right now.
A trade, by the way, that particularly those who subscribe to analytical-based hockey and thinking would say was a terrible trade for the Vancouver Canucks. for the Vancouver Canucks?
I mean, it remains to be seen. I mean, Jared McCann hasn't proven anything at the NHL level. Eric Goodbranson is older. You know, he's a stay-at-home physical defenseman who can provide you with a little bit of offense. I don't know if you could say that either team has won that trade. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so far that neither team has benefited, let's say, from that trade. But I think I have more confidence in the Panthers eventually benefiting from that trade than I do the Canucks benefiting from that trade. Here's Ed Willis. This was published on Halloween, so was that last Monday? Here's Ed Willis. Of course, you know him formerly from Sun Media here in Winnipeg. He now writes for the Vancouver Province. The Canucks are only 9 games into this season, but even with this limited sample size, it should be clear, as they are now constructed, they can't compete with the best teams in the West. And that's not a bad thing. For the last 2 years, the organization has clung to the illusion they can rebuild their team while staying competitive. This thinking led to signing, in no particular order, Ryan Miller, Radim Verbata, Louis Erickson, and Philip Larson. It also led to trades for Brandon Sutter, Derek Dorsett, and lest you forget, Brandon Prust. And that's left the team in the worst kind of limbo. The organization has tried to serve two masters, but it hasn't worked. The only out for this team, in fact, is developing their young players, and that has to be their priority for the next 5.5 months. That's 9 games into the season.
Right, and you know, we should also throw in a big trade for the Vancouver Canucks happened last year, and that was going out and getting Brandon Sutter.
Yeah, he mentions that. I mean, Ed Willis mentions that in the article.
Right. I don't know if you just mentioned it right there, but, you know, well, let's address that. I mean, the Vancouver Canucks, when you have the Sedins, and this is the last year of their contract.
Next year is.
Anytime you're led by these two guys, you could argue these guys are future Hall of Famers. They've had excellent NHL careers internationally and with the Canucks, especially when the Canucks went to the Stanley Cup back in 2011, guys. But where is this team going? Right, and a lot of people have started to point the finger at Willie Desjardins, who got them into the playoffs a couple of years ago. Last year, they obviously didn't make the playoffs, but you look at this team, and you know, after the Sedins and after Louis Erickson, who by the way doesn't have a goal yet in 11 games, you know, they've got some good depth pieces, guys like Yannick Hansen, who used to play for the Moose. But after that, I mean, that's what we talked about when we were previewing the season 3.5 weeks ago. We were saying, where are the goals going to come from? They've got to come from some of these younger guys like Jake Virtanen and Bo Horvat. And you could argue that these guys have been pushed into the league a little bit too early. Jake Virtanen was pushed into the league as an 18-year-old. And maybe pushed is the wrong word. But you could say that they haven't provided the Sedins and the top line with more secondary scoring. Right, Drew? So, you know, in a roundabout way, should the Canucks fan base hope that the team tanks this year? Maybe, because then they'll get a top draft pick and maybe get someone that can help them. But I don't think that this team is – not only do I not think this is going to be a playoff team this year, I don't think the team is going to be a playoff team next year.
Isn't it amazing the difference a couple of weeks can make? October 22nd, this Vancouver Canucks team was 4-0-1. And obviously, again, early in the season, but I'm just saying they were 4-0-1. And they were, you know, leading the Pacific, and everybody was going, where is this team? Like, where did that come from? Nobody expected it, and everybody was shocked. And then, you know, a couple
weeks.
They've
lost their last 6 games.
That's right. They've lost their last 6. They've been shut out 4 times.
Yeah.
The sky seems to be falling. And it's interesting. I was listening to, you know, talk radio the other day, and they were talking about, you know, who's done the biggest disservice to, you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is they're already talking about firing Willie Desjardins, not the Canucks, but people around the team are talking about, you know, firing a coach that just won a Calder Cup, you know, not that many years ago. And you're sitting there going, this guy was brought in because he was going to be a good mentor for some of these young players.
Okay, but Dave, you know, you make some good points there. But, you know, I look at this team and it's not like, you know, before the Vancouver Canucks fans, you know, roast me here. I mean, it's not a bad team. I just don't think it's a very good team either.
And well, isn't that the worst situation to be in?
They're a middling team. And you look at the goaltending. If you looked at Ryan Miller and Jacob Markstrom's numbers, Ryan Miller's goals against is 1.79 and his save percentage is .934. But his record is 1-4. So what does that tell you? He's not getting any goal support. He's not getting any run support. It's just like the Jays against Cleveland. They didn't get any run support, give any run support for their pitchers.
All of a sudden, he thinks he watches one baseball game. He thinks he's easy.
I went to a Jays game this year.
Someone was in the Sky Dome this year.
And Jacob Markstrom, by the way, is also, he's a good backup goaltender. He's actually played more games than Ryan Miller. So I look at this defense, and it's not as good as it was 5 years ago. When the team went to the Stanley Cup Finals with, you know, guys like Alex Edler, and then you had Dan Hamhuis, and you had, who am I forgetting here, a couple of other good defensemen. But certainly this team is
– Bieksa, as Don Cherry
Kevin Bieksa is another guy they had back then. But, you know, and again, it's not a bad group of defensemen. I actually like Eric Gudbranson. You know, Alex Edler, has he taken a step back? I mean, from being a top offensive defenseman? Yes, he's got 1 point in 11 games. So, I mean, this team right now just isn't very good, and they're probably not going to make the playoffs. So, sure, you hope that maybe they finish bottom five in the league and get a high draft pick.
Here's Gary Lawless. This is yesterday in his article on TSN.ca about a look at the potential hot seat situations across the NHL. He lists Trevor Linden as one of the guys who has a hot seat. Linden has been the front man in Vancouver during a period of curious decision-making within the franchise. Just think, not too long ago, this team had Mike Gillis as GM, Lawrence Gilman and Lauren Henning as assistant GMs, Eric Crawford running the scouting department, and Alain Vigneault behind the bench. Now the team is struggling and there doesn't seem to be a plan in place. Head coach Willie Desjardins is everyone's favorite fall guy, but he doesn't have the players to make this a playoff team. Linden needs a long-term vision for the franchise and ownership that will support it. Running a sports franchise seems like fun until they hand you the keys and things get messy. Linden needs to set a direction and then see if he can execute it. Linden has a legacy to protect in Vancouver. The time has come to either establish the horsepower within the organization to activate a real plan or begin to develop an exit strategy. That's Gary Lawless of TSN 1290 and TSN.ca right. About the Vancouver Canucks president, Trevor Linden.
Right, and I would love to disagree with Gary, but I don't. I agree with everything he said there. And it goes back to what we said before. I mean, they were expecting some of these younger players, whether it's a Jake Virtanen, whether it's a Bo Horvat, who are now in their second and third years in the league. They were expecting these guys to contribute, put in 20 goals, put in 25 goals. Brendan Gaunce, players like this. And these guys just haven't taken that next step in their development. So I think that, they had a plan. And I just don't think that the plan is working right now. So it's just not a very good team. And, it goes back to what we said. How many people actually thought the Vancouver Canucks were going to be a playoff team this year?
Nobody. I mean, I didn't. You didn't. They shouldn't have been a playoff team 2 years ago. I mean, I guess they should have been in that they were. But they were a smoke and mirrors playoff team 2 years ago, and they got exposed by the Flames in the first round. So, I mean, nobody really thinks that this Vancouver Canucks team is anything but a team that has veteran players that are trending downwards and a team with young players that there's no evidence that they're going to be anything other than bottom six players.
Well, I think that, look, the team as the season progresses and if the team continues down this kind of path of, middling results and, or even terrible results based on their last few games, you'll see some trades. And potentially we may see the Sedins get, moved and Louis Erickson, all these signings that they had because, they do accept that reality that, we have to make the decision. And it's never a good one and the fan base never reacts positively to it. But at the same time, what would you rather have? Would you rather have a team that just kind of putts along, or would you rather be able to challenge in 4 to 5 years? It sucks, believe me, as a fan base to say, okay, you have to have a long-term perspective on it. But, I mean, what kind of results are you going to get from this?
Nobody in Vancouver, fan base-wise, for the most part, would probably quibble with tanking completely.
Right.
Because and maybe it's not even tanking. It's just saying, we're not good enough as currently constructed. We need to start over. We need to tear it all down. Because you've seen it in so many other cities now where tearing it all down generally will lead you. It's a painful couple of years. The Chicago Cubs lost over 100 games, I believe it was 5 years ago. But they tore it all down and they built it all back up. And guess what? Now they're the World Series champions.
We'll use a hockey example, Drew. And 4 or 5 years ago, I think the Calgary Flames were in a similar position. That was before they traded Jerome Iginla, before they traded guys like Jay Bouwmeester to St. Louis.
Yeah.
I mean, the Calgary Flames were not making the playoffs, but every year they were just falling short. So they decided, okay, we're going to trade these guys, get some high draft picks, and start rebuilding the team. Who did they get? They got a Sean Monahan. They got a Sam Bennett. So I think the Vancouver Canucks are in a similar type of position here. And fans don't want to hear that because year after year, guys, especially I would say over the last 10 or so years, the Vancouver Canucks have either been in the playoffs or been competing for a playoff spot. They haven't had many real bad bottom five finishes. So I think it might be time to address that and then realize they're not going to go out and say that, because signing a guy like Eric Gudbranson, pardon me, trading for a guy like Eric Gudbranson, for example, isn't done by a team who isn't trying to make the playoffs, right? So,
well, that Louis Erickson signing.
Exactly.
That's a 7-year deal for Louis Erickson.
But they had to sign him, Drew. They needed some secondary scoring. They needed primary scoring.
Yeah, I mean, the thought was that Erickson would gel well with the Sedins.
He hasn't been
sweet.
Good so far.
He hasn't been good so far at all. But and that's bad management by the Canucks. That's bad management by Jim Benning. That's bad management by Trevor Linden in thinking that Louis Erickson or Eric Gudbranson or any free agent really does anything other than, sort of keep them in the same middling position as opposed to really giving them a boost. Because even if Louis Erickson performs at Louis Erickson levels so far this year, this team isn't good enough to be a playoff team.
Could be a long season in Vancouver.
Well, and that's what I think the fan base is so frustrated about, is that it's going to be a long season, whereas next year it also looks like it's going to be a long season. And until they decide to really tear this thing down, there's no light at the end of the tunnel.
Plus, from their perspective, they're looking at other teams that have somewhat, rebuilt
the
themselves.
The Leafs and the Flames.
And the Oilers. So you're seeing teams that are within your division getting better and getting younger and having a lot of young talent that's going to be good for a number of years, especially with the Oilers.
I would even take the Oilers out of the equation, because the Oilers was dumb luck that they kept falling into the first overall picks.
Regardless, but you have to deal with the reality of the situation.
Sure.
And as it is currently, the Oilers have a tremendous amount of talent on their roster and will have that talent on their roster for a long time.
Right.
So if you're the Vancouver Canucks and you're saying, well, great, we have to go against that Oilers team for the next couple of years, and what do we have right now and what are we going to have? That's problematic. So you almost have to say, are we going to challenge for a Stanley Cup this year? Because if we're not, then it's time to just dump it all and start all over again.
I'd be curious if they've approached the Sedins and said, look, do you want to finish your career here? If so, just so you know, it's going to be a very rough ride. If you don't, we'd be willing to consider moving you to a destination you're interested in.
Well, I mean, they haven't won a Stanley Cup, but I know that the Sedins, they've only played in one city in the NHL. I know they love living in Vancouver and they have families and all that, but I mean, I guess if they did want to go pursue a Stanley Cup, you'd obviously have to trade both of them, though, right? Their package deal.
You would think but every team that's on the cusp of a Stanley Cup, and if they can have an option to get the Sedins, that's the right move for the Canucks to make.
Sedins for Trouba and Bermie Drew. Do it.
It's head to break. When we come back, Ted Wyman is going to join us. He's on the Jets road trip. We'll talk about the road trip. We'll talk about the Jets season with Ted. It's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.